Blog Talk Radio. Hello, 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 and good evening to you. This is the Queen of the Empowered Soul, and I am so excited about this episode tonight because I am coming to you out of San Marcos, California. I have been out here for the past 3.5 days. And I'm having an amazing time out here. It has just came to a conclusion. And I do apologize because I should have been on the air at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and 7 p.m. Central Time. Unfortunately, the event I was at was so powerful and I just was not able to pull myself away to be on the air with you. But I know when I share with you where I have been for the past 3 days you are going to be excited because I was investing in you, my listeners, my clients, and my friends. I spent the last 3 days with Michael E. Gerber and the Origination Experience. And oh my heavens, what an experience this was for me. I am now holding in my hand the E-Myth Revisit, Why Most Small Business Don't Work and What to Do About It, by Michael E. Gerber. And you all know that Michael E. Gerber is the big mouth for small business. In other words, Michael E. Gerber is the guru for entrepreneurship and for small business. So I am so excited. I spent the last 3 days with some amazing people from Colombia. We had people from Mexico, had people from Canada, and all over the United States. And what an empowering experience this has been. And I just want to go on record as thanking Michael E. Gerber for his commitment to entrepreneurship and for all the amazing people that I just spent the last 3 days with. I want to thank you for being as crazy as I am and for the belief that we can make a difference in entrepreneurship. I want to remind you that the number you can call me at is 1-646-915-8166. We have another hour on, and I decide I want to share some tips here from the E-Myth Revisited, Why Most Small Business Don't Work and What to Do About It. And I was here gaining access to that experience that can help me serve you better in a process known as the Dreaming Room. And again, I'm so super excited for this additional tool that I have in my toolbox. So I do not have the chat room up, and I will try and get it up and see if there's anyone there who has joined me. But in the meantime, I want to just go ahead and encourage you to call in. Again, the number is 646-915-8166. And you give me a call here. I am broadcasting out of San Marcos, California. We are just about 15 or 20 minutes out of Carlsbad, California. And what a beautiful place. This is my first time out here in California, and I'm praying that it will not be the last time. So this is where I am broadcasting from tonight. You're accustomed to be hearing me out of Connecticut on Wednesday morning, and now it is a Wednesday evening in San Marcos, California. So as I promised, I want to read section from the E-Myth Revisited book by Michael E. Gerber. Why intoxicate themselves with work so they won't see how they really are? Aldous Huxley, and that's a quote from that gentleman. The E-Myth is the myth of the entrepreneur. It runs deep in this country and rings of the heroic picture that typical entrepreneur and heirloom pictures come to mind. A man or a woman standing alone, windblown against the element, bravely defying insurmountable odds, climbing sheer faces of treacherous rock, all to realize the dream of creating a business of one's own. The legal reek of mobility, of lofty extra human efforts, of a prodigious commitment to larger than life ideals. Well, while there are such people, my experience tells me they are rare. One of the thousands of business people I have had the opportunity to know and work with over the past 2 decades. Few were real entrepreneurs. When I met them, the vision was all but gone in most. The zest for the climb had turned into a terror of heights. The face of the rock had become something to climb to rather than scale to. Exhaustion was common. Acceleration was rare. But hadn't all of them once been entrepreneurs? After all, they had started their own businesses. There must have been some dream that drove them to such a risk. But if so, where was the dream now? Why had it faded? Where was the entrepreneur who had started the business? The answer is simple. The entrepreneur had only existed for a moment. A fleeting second in time. And then it was gone. In most cases, forever. If the entrepreneur survived at all, it was only as a myth that grew out of a misunderstanding about who goes into business and why. A misunderstanding that has cost us here in this country more than we can possibly imagine. In lost resources, lost opportunities, and wasted lives. That myth, that misunderstanding, I call it e-myth, the myth of entrepreneur. And it finds its roots in the country in a romantic belief that small businesses are started by entrepreneurs, when in fact, most are not. Then, who does start small businesses in America and why? The entrepreneurial seizure. To understand the e-myth and the misunderstanding at its core, let's take a closer look at the person who goes into business, not after he goes into business, but before. For that matter, where were you before you started your business? And if you are thinking about going into business, where are you now? Well, if you are like most of the people I have known, you were working for someone else. What were you doing? Probably technical work, like most everybody who goes into business. You were a carpenter, a mechanic, a machinist. You were a bookkeeper or a puddle clipper, a draftsperson, a hairdresser, a barber, or a computer programmer, a doctor, or a technical writer, a graphic artist, or an accountant, an interior designer, or a plumber, or a salesperson. But whatever you were doing technical work. And you were probably darn good at it. But you were doing it for somebody else. Then one day, for no apparent reason, something happened. It might have been the weather, a birthday, or a child's graduation from high school. It might have been a paycheck you received on a Friday afternoon, or a sideways glance from the boss that just didn't sit right. It might have been a feeling that your boss didn't really appreciate your contribution to the success of his business. It could have been anything. It doesn't matter what. But one day, for apparently no reason, you were suddenly stricken with an entrepreneurial seizure. And from that day on, your life has never been the same. Inside your mind, it sounded something like this. What am I going to do this for? Why am I working for this guy? Hell, I know as much about this business as he does. If it weren't for me, he wouldn't have a business. Any dummy can run a business. I'm working for one. And the moment you paid attention to what you were saying and really look into the heart, your faith was sealed. The excitement of cutting the cord became your constant companion. The thought of independence followed you everywhere. The idea of being your own boss, doing your own thing, singing your own song, and becoming obsessively irresistible. Once you were stricken with the entrepreneurial seizure, there was no relief. You couldn't get rid of it. You had to start your own business. If you are just joining me, I am reading from the E-Myth Revisited, Why Most Small Businesses Don't Work and What to Do About It, by Michael E. Gerber. Now, the fatal assumption. In the throes of your entrepreneurial seizure, you fell victim to the most disastrous assumption anyone can make about going into business. It is an assumption made by all technicians who go into business for themselves. One of the charts, of course, of a business, from grand opening to liquidation, the moment it is made. The fatal assumption is, if you understand the technical work of a business, you understand a business that does that technical work. And the reason it's fatal is that it just isn't true. In fact, is the root cause of most small business failures. The technical work of a business and a business that does not technically work are totally different things. But the technician who starts a business fails to see this. To the technician suffering from an entrepreneurial seizure, a business is not a business, but a place to go to work. So, the carpenter or the electrician or the plumber becomes a contractor. The barber opens up a barber shop. The technician starts a technical writing business. The hairdresser starts a beauty salon. The engineer goes into the semiconductor business. The musician opens up a music store. All of them believe that by understanding the technical work of the business, they are immediately and immediately qualified to run a business that does that kind of work. And it is simply not true. In fact, rather than being their greatest single asset, knowing the technical work of their business becomes their greatest single liability. For if the technician did not know how to do the technical work of the business, he wouldn't have to learn how to do it, how to get it done. He would be forced to learn how to make the business work rather than to do the work himself. The real tragedy is that when the technician falls prey to a fatal assumption, the business that was supposed to free him from the limitations of working for somebody else actually enslaves him. Suddenly, the job he knew how to do so well becomes one job he knows how to do, plus a dozen others he doesn't know how to do it at all. Because although the entrepreneurial seizure started the business, it's the technician who goes into work. And suddenly the entrepreneurial dream turns into a technician's nightmare. Isn't that powerful? You know, and some examples here. You see the young woman baking pies. See the young woman start a business baking pie. See the young woman becomes an old woman. We have a caller here, and I am going to take the caller. Hello, caller, you're on the air. We have a caller. Hello, caller, can you hear me? Hello, caller, you're on the air. Good evening. Hello? Caller, you're on the air. Hello, caller, you're on the air. I guess my caller will call back. Please try and dial in again because I think you are not hearing me. So would you please call back? The number is 646-915 8166. And we do look forward to our caller. And I think it is someone from this local area here in Carlsbad or San Marcos. So I do look forward to get into conversation with the caller. So caller, if you're listening online, please call back. Thank you. So Michael E. Gerber goes on to say here, I met Sarah after she had been in business for 3 years. She told me they have been the longest 3 years of her life. Sarah's business was named All About Pies, not its real name. But in truth, Sarah's business wasn't really about pies. It was rarely about work. The work Sarah did, the work Sarah used to love to do more than anything else, plus the work Sarah had never done in her life. In fact, Sarah said to me, not only do I hate to do this, she spread her arms, taking in a small shop in which we stood, but I hate. She emphasized the word almost fiercely. I hate baking pies. I can't stand the thought of pies. I can't stand the smell of pies. I can't stand the sight of pies. And then she started crying. The sweet, fresh aroma of pies filled the air. It was 7 a.m. And All About Pies was to open in 30 minutes. But Sarah's mind was someplace else. It's 7 o'clock, she said, wiping her eyes with her apron, as though reading my mind. Don't you realize I've been here since 3 o'clock this morning? And that I was up at 2 to get ready? And that by the time I get the pies ready, open the business, take care of my customers, clean up, close up, do the shopping, reconcile the cash register, go to the bank, have dinner, and get the pies ready for tomorrow's bake. It will be 9:30 or 10 o'clock tonight. And by the time I do all that, by the time any normal person, for God's sake, she says, would say that the day was done, I will then also need to sit down and begin to figure how am I going to pay the rent next month. And all this, she spread her arms widely, wearily again, as though to accentuate everything she had just said, because my very best friend told me I was crazy not to open a pie shop because I was so darn good at it. And what's worse, I believed them. I saw a way out of the horrible job I used to have. I saw a way to get free doing work I love to do and doing it all for me. She was on a tier that I didn't want to interpret. I waited quietly to hear what she would say next. Instead, she kicked the huge black oven in front of her with her right foot. "Damn," she exploded. "Damn, damn, damn," she emphasizes. She kicked the oven again. And then slumped slightly deeply and hugged herself almost desperately. "What do I do now?" she said, almost in a whisper. Not really asking me. I knew. Asking herself. Sarah leaned against the wall and remained there quietly for a moment. Starting at her feet, the large clock on the wall ticked loudly in the empty shop. I could hear the cars driving by on a busy street in front of the shop as the city came awake. The sun shone harshly through the spotless windows, sweeping the gleaming oak floor in front of the counter. I could see the dust on the stream of light hanging, suspending as though waiting for Sarah to speak. She was deep in debt. She had spent everything she had and more to create this lovely little shop. The floors were the best oak. The ovens were the best ovens. The display were charming and the very best money could buy. She had put her heart into this place just as she could put her heart into her pies, falling in love with baking. As a young girl, mentored by her aunt who had lived with her family while Sarah was growing up. Her aunt had filled her family's kitchen, Sarah's childhood, with the delicious sweet aroma of freshly baked pies. Her aunt had introduced her to the magic of the process of kneading of dough, the cleaning of the oven, the sprinkling of the flour to prepare the trays, and carefully cutting of the apples and cherries and rhubarb and peach. It was a labor of love. Her aunt had corrected her when, in her haste, Sarah had hurried the process. Her aunt had told her time and time again, "Sarah, dear, we have all the time in the world. Baking pies is not about getting done. It's about baking pies." And Sarah thought she understood her. But now Sarah knew that baking pies was about getting done. Baking pies was ruined for her. At least, she thought it was. The clock continued empathic ticking. I watched as Sarah seemed to shrink even closer to herself. I knew how oppressive it would be for her to find herself so deeply in debt, to feel so hopeless in the face of it. Where was her aunt now? Who was going to teach her what to do next? Sarah, I said, as carefully as I could, it's time to learn all about pies again. The technician suffering from an entrepreneurial seizure takes the word he loves to do and turns them into the job. The work that was born out of love becomes a chore among a weltered of other less familiar and less pleasant chores. Rather than maintaining its specialness, representing the unique skill the technician possesses, and upon which he started the business, the work becomes trivialized, something to get through in order to make room for everything else that must be done. I told Sarah that every technician suffered from an entrepreneurial seizure, experiences exactly the same thing. First, acceleration. Second, terror. Third, exhaustion. And finally, despair. A terrible sense of loss, not only the loss of what was closest to them, their special relationship with their work, but the loss of purpose, the loss of self. Sarah looked at me with a sense of relief, as though she felt but not judged. "You have got my number," she said, "but what do I do now?" "You take this one step at a time," I answered. "The technician isn't the only problem you have got to deal with." Now, you know, as I read Sarah's story, and if you're just joining me, you know I am reading from The E-Myth Revisited, Why Most Small Businesses Don't Work and What to Do About It. As I read word for word what Michael E. Gerber wrote in his book, how many of us have heard our story in Sarah's story? How many of us? You know, and I think I can safely say, not only in America, but in any part of the world that you are listening to me from, can you relate to Sarah's story? Is that your story? I can ask myself the question, Daphne, is Sarah's story your story too? I know that there is part of my story in Sarah's story. And that's the reason that I have spent the past 3 days here in San Marcos, California, to make sure that I can redesign what I do as an entrepreneur and as a small business owner. I have spent these last 3 days here so that I can help you to bring your dreams alive, that I can help you to create the business that you were called to do. I spent the last 3 days here so that I can invite you to come dream with me. I spent the last 3 days here so that I can share with you this amazing experience of what it means to dream, to awake the entrepreneur in you. And in the coming weeks ahead, I will be rolling out a new program that will help entrepreneurs to dream the impossible dream, to help entrepreneurs to just to be creative and to just dream. I will be showing entrepreneurs how to go dreaming with a blank piece of paper, a blank sheet of paper, and a beginner's mind. I want to just continue here into part two of this book, because this is amazing. I know that there are many, many people out there who are already familiar with the work of Michael E. Gerber. And I don't know who it is that introduced me to Michael, but I want to thank you for loving me enough to introduce me to this phenomenal work. Part two in the E-Myth Revisited deals with the entrepreneur, the manager, and the technician. And as I read, you will realize that each chapter begins with a quote. And the quote for this one comes from Jean Vesey. Thus, in the course of this life, one man acquires many personal qualities, many personages, many eyes, because each speak for itself independently of others, says I, me, when it appears. No, the technician isn't the problem only. The problem is more complicated than that. The problem is that everybody who goes into business is actually three people in one. They are the entrepreneur, they are the manager, and they are the technician. And the problem is compounded by the fact that while each of them personally want to be the boss, none of them wants to have a business. So they start a business together in order to get rid of the boss, and the conflict begins. To show you how the problem manifests itself in all of us, let's examine the way our very internal personalities interact. Let's take a look at two personalities we are all familiar with, the fat guy and the skinny guy. Have you ever decided to go on a diet? You are sitting in front of the television set on Saturday afternoon, watching the athletic competition. Ah, awed by the athlete's stamina and dexterity. You're eating a sandwich. You're second since you sat down to watch the event 2 hours ago. You are feeling lurkish in the face of all the action and the screams when suddenly somebody wakes up in you and says, "What are you doing? Look at yourself. You are fat. You are out of shape. Do something about it." It has happened to us all. Somebody wakes up inside of with us a total different picture of who we should be and what we should be doing in this case. Let's call him the skinny guy. Who's the skinny guy? He's the one who used the words like discipline, exercise, organization. The skinny guy is the intolerant, self-righteous, a sticker for detail, a compulsive tyrant. The skinny guy abhors fat people, can't stand sitting around, needs to be on the move, lives for action. The skinny guy has just taken over. Watch out. Things are about to change. Before you know it, you are cleaning all the fattening foods out of your refrigerator. You are buying a new pair of running shoes, barbells, and sweats. Things are going to be different around here. You have a new lease on life. You plan your new physical regime up at 5, run 3 miles, cold shower at 6, breakfast of wheat, toast, black coffee, half a grapefruit, then ride your bicycle to work, home for 7, run another 2 miles, to bed at 10. The world's already different place. And you actually put it off. By Monday night, you have lost 2 pounds. You go to sleep dreaming of the winning the Boston Marathon. Why not? The way things are going, it's only a matter of time. Tuesday night, you get on the scale another pound gone. You are incredible, gorgeous, a lean machine on Wednesday. You rarely pour it on. You work out an extra hour in the morning and an extra half an hour at night. You can't wait to get on the scale. You're stripped down to your bare skin, shivering in the bathroom, filled with expectation of what your scale is going to tell you. You step lightly onto it and look down. What you see is nothing. You haven't just lost 1 ounce. You are exactly the same as you were on Tuesday. Dejection creeps in. You begin to feel a slight tinge of resistance. After all that work, after all that sweat and effort, and then nothing? It isn't fair. But you shrug it off. After all, today, another day, you go to bed vowing to work harder on Tuesday. But somehow, something has changed. You didn't know what's changed until Thursday morning. It's raining. The room is cold. Something feels different. What is it? For a minute or two, you can't quite put your finger on it. And then you get it. Somebody else in my body. It's the fat guy. He's back. As he doesn't want to run. As a matter of fact, he doesn't even want to get out of bed. It's cold outside. Run. Are you kidding me? The fat guy doesn't want anything to do with it. The only exercise he might be interested in is eating. And all of a sudden, you find yourself in front of the refrigerator, inside the refrigerator, all over the kitchen. Food is now your major interest. The marathon is gone. The lean machine is gone. The sweats and barbells and running shoes are gone. The fat guy is back. He is running the show again. It happens to all of us, time and time again, because we have been deluded into thinking we are really one person. And so when the skinny guy decides to change things, we actually believe that it's I who's making that decision. And then the fat guy makes up the changes. It all back away. We think it's I who's making that decision too. But it isn't I, it's we. The skinny guy and the fat guy are two totally different personalities. The different needs, different interests, and different lifestyles. That's why we don't like each other. Why each want totally different things? The problem is that when you are the skinny guy, you are totally consumed by his needs, his interests, and his lifestyle. And when something happens, the scale disappoints you, the weather turns cold, somebody offers you a ham sandwich. At that moment, the fat guy, who has been waiting in the wings all this time, grabs your attention, grabs control. You're him again. In other words, when you are the skinny guy, you are always making promises for the fat guy to keep. And when you are the fat guy, you're always making promises for the skinny guy to keep. Is it any wonder we have such a tough time keeping our commitments to ourselves? It's not what we are indecisive or unreliable. It's that each and every one of us is a whole set of different personalities. each with his own interest and way of doing things, asking any one of them to defer to any of the other is inviting a battle or even a full-scale war. Anyone who has ever experienced the conflict between the fat guy and the skinny guy, and haven't we all, knows what I mean. You can't be both. One of them has to lose, and they both know it. Well, that's the kind of war going on inside the owner of every small business. But it isn't a three-way battle between the entrepreneur, the manager, and the technician. Unfortunately, it's a battle one no one can win. Understanding the difference between them will quickly explain why. The entrepreneurial personality turns the most trivial condition into an exceptional opportunity. The entrepreneur is the visionary in us, the dreamer, the energy behind every human activity, the imagination. The entrepreneur builds a house, and the instant it's done, begins planning the next one. The manager creates neat, orderly rows of things. The entrepreneur creates things the manager puts in rows. The manager is the one who runs after the entrepreneur to clean up the mess. Without the entrepreneur, there would be no mess to clean up. Without the manager, there would be no business, no society. Without the entrepreneur, there would be no innovation. It is the tension between the entrepreneur's vision and the manager paragonism that would create the systemist form which all great works are born. The technician is the doer. If you want to do it right, do it yourself, is the technician credo. The technician loves to think. Things are to be taken apart and put back together again. Things aren't supposed to be dreamed about. They are supposed to be done. The entrepreneur lives in the future, and the manager lives in the past, and the technician lives in the present. He loves to feel. He loves the feel of things and the fact that things can get done. As long as the technician is working, he is happy, but only on one thing at a time. He knows that two things can't get done simultaneously. Only a fool would try, so he works steadily and is happiest when he is in control of the work flow. As a result, hello caller, good evening. Hello, can you hear me? Hello, caller. Caller, you're on the air. Hello, caller. You're on the air. Can you hear me? Okay. That was the caller call back again. I apologize for that. I guess we are having technical difficulties, and we have just a few more minutes remaining. So I'm not sure what the problem is, and I do apologize for that. So I just want to wrap up here. I will continue our show coming up on Wednesday. My guests will be out of Germany, and I'm looking forward for that. I have a powerful lineup of entrepreneurs for the shows coming up, because I spent the last 3 days with some powerful entrepreneurs, and I'm looking forward for you to hear their stories. I want to remind you to visit the Vision Weekend Conference 2010 and grab your registration there. I want to remind you that our invited keynote is Michael E. Gerber. You want to be in his presence. I am telling you, you want to be there to learn from this amazing guru of small business venture and entrepreneurship. I tell you, this was an amazing 3 days that I spent here. So again, I want to remind you of the conference coming up on September the 3rd and 4th. We begin on the evening of the 2nd. It will take place at the Heritage Hotel Golf and Spa in Connecticut, in Southbury. If you are interested in getting a group rate of 10 or more, give us a call at 860-355-9838. We'll talk about a special rate for you for your group. If you have students who are entrepreneurs, give us a call too. We have a special rate for them. And remember, I'm telling you to keep your ears open, because I have a new program that I will be rolling out, and to invite you to come on over and dream with me. Again, today is the 21st of July 2010, and I am broadcasting out of San Marcos, California. And this was an amazing experience for me, being out here for the past 3 days and just rubbing shoulders with and learning from some of the most amazing entrepreneurs from not only the U.S., but from Colombia, from Mexico, from Canada, and as we come into the U.S., from St. Louis, Missouri, all over. And I'm thankful for that experience. I want you to keep focused. Hold your destiny, and know that I'll be inviting you to come dream with me. This is the Queen of the Empowered Soul saying, see you next week, same time, same place. Love you, and I appreciate your support.
You've been called to change nations and generations. Come on and praise your God.